Hello everyone, this is Matt, and welcome to another episode of Takeout with Ashley Coff RD and Robin O'Brien, discussing better nutrition simplified and the new food economy. Who's up for a food awakening? Today we have Dr. Frank Lipman on the show. Dr. Lipman is a pioneer and internationally recognized expert in the fields of integrative and functional medicine. He is the founder and director of 1111 Wellness Center in New York City, where his personal brand of healing has helped thousands of people reclaim their vitality and recover their zest of life. Oh, we all need that. He saw that true healing lay in a blend between Eastern and Western medicine, and now practices his unique blend, or what he calls good medicine, combining all the systems in which he has trained. He is a New York Times best-selling author, and guess what? I'm looking forward to this one. Right, over to you, ladies.
Today, Ashley and I are so excited to have our friend Dr. Frank Lipman on the show. He's a pioneer, really, in healthcare for the 21st century. He received his initial medical training in South Africa. He moved to New York City, where he founded 1111 Wellness Center. And that's where I first met him. I don't know how many years ago it was, but it was such a meeting of the mind, such an instant friendship, so much respect for Dr. Lipman and what he has done. So we are just so excited to have you on the show today. Thank you so much for taking the time.
Thank you.
So, you know, we were just discussing a little bit how you really have pioneered this model of Eastern meets West medicine. And you really have, you know, kind of tapped into something that now is being recognized as really true healthcare. And I know that when you started back in the 1970s, that wasn't always the case. And that as you were sort of looking at medicine and these two different aspects of it, that you had this aha moment. And I'm wondering if you can share with our audience a little bit about that moment.
Sure. You know, I, like all doctors, get trained in sort of hospital care or emergency type of care medicine, which we call Western medicine. So you get trained in a hospital where you're taking care of acutely ill patients, which is wonderful. So you get a good training for that type of medicine. But when you come out of your training and you get into private practice, or you're getting to see people in primary care, you're seeing completely different problems. People can't poop and they got headaches and they have back pain and they can't sleep and you don't know what to do with them because you weren't trained to deal with those problems. I was lucky enough to be exposed to homeopathy and acupuncture early in the practice that I was working in. So I saw that, you know, homeopathy, acupuncture, and some of these alternatives were actually helping these patients that I had no idea of how to help. So that was my first introduction, and then I came to the States, and the same thing happened. I had to do a residency, and I came here in 84, and I had to do a residency in internal medicine. Same thing. You know, I was in the hospital, and, you know, it's wonderful. You know, we're taking care of acute heart attacks and acute asthma attacks, and you saw people who needed surgery. So, you know, that training was wonderful, but once you got to primary care, you got out of the hospital setting, our training wasn't particularly helpful. And I was very disillusioned with Western medicine in the early days, as I am now. And I started exploring other alternatives. And there happened to be an acupuncture clinic in the South Bronx where I was doing my residency. And so I said, well, I'm going to check this out. And I walked over to the clinic and, you know, I was totally intrigued by acupuncture. I mean, it's a long story, but totally intrigued, started going there to the acupuncture clinic while I was doing my residency. And I noticed that patients that we weren't helping in the hospital were being helped at the acupuncture clinic. In the same way, the acupuncture clinic wasn't particularly helpful for the types of patients that were being helped at the hospital. So it wasn't even that difficult to see that the future of medicine would be a combination of using Western medicine for acute care, crisis care, emergency care, and using alternatives. And where I was trained in first was the acupuncture and Chinese medicine, which happened to be more effective for the chronic type of problems that we couldn't help. So it was actually pretty easy and obvious to see that this is a way that I wanted to go, and this is a way of the future of medicine, because you're catering to many more problems. That's a long story short.
Well, you know, I love it. And I love the way that you address sort of the acute issues versus sort of the chronic. And I think to take that lens to say, you know, different systems need different approaches is really smart and really forward thinking.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't, you know, I didn't even think of it as forward thinking. I was looking for what is going to help patients. You know, interesting, in South Africa, the medicine, we got trained in a very different way. It was more about relationships, being there for people. And it's just sort of a natural thing. I didn't even have to think out of, you know, for me, it was just a natural way. And also, you know, maybe coming from South Africa, you always question the system because the system was so rotten in South Africa. So me questioning the medical system was just an extension of me questioning any institution. You know, that was sort of the way you got brought up and the way you thought there. So it wasn't really that difficult. And then, you know, I met a couple of years later, I met Jeff Bland, and he really articulated sort of Chinese medicine from a Western perspective. And that was another aha. That was a real aha moment for me, because until I met Jeff Bland, I was struggling to sort of incorporate the two, because it was obvious that Western medicine was great for these crisis problems and acute care. And Chinese medicine, I was being taught in this completely different language, you know, too much dampness and cold, and the language was so different. But Jeff Bland, when I first met him, you know, was articulating Chinese medicine from a Western perspective. He was talking about improving function and creating balance, but he's still talking from a physiological and anatomical and pathological perspective of Western medicine. So he was really helpful in me sort of putting it all together.
He's so fascinating too, because I think one of the things, as you talk about putting this all together, it's also recognizing what a patient here, you know, what their day-to-day has been like, and also what they, from the get-go. And a big part of that is nutrition. And we know that that is, you know, the foods that you're eating. I mean, you focus so much on that. And one of the things that you've pioneered that I think is exceptional and really helping you with your implementation and the results you're getting in your practice, but I know as a result, also others that have learned from you, is this whole space of health coaching. And I'd love to talk about that, because I think we have this, one of the challenges that's put on physicians, even as they have aha moments like you're talking about, or they acquire the knowledge themselves, is you literally cannot do everything for the patient. And so I'd love to hear a little bit about how you sort of got inspired and got to know the idea of health coaching and how you are integrating that into your practice.
Yeah, I mean, it sort of happened by chance in a way, and absolutely now I'm totally addicted to my health coaches, and I'm 100% sure that this is the future, because, you know, as much as I know, and I don't know as much as my health coaches in many aspects of what they do, there's so much you as a doctor can do and so much time you can spend with a patient. You know, now that I have health coaches, you know, health coaches can basically help my patients implement the programs. So they can, you know, when I tell a patient, in the old days, they used to say, oh, well, stop eating sugar, stop eating gluten, you know, go learn to meditate, yada, yada, yada. And I wasn't giving them the tools to actually implement what I was suggesting. And, you know, for some people it was fine, but for most people it was very difficult. And I happened to stumble on a health coach sort of by mistake, because I had started this supplement company, and we wanted to actually have someone online who can actually help coach the patients or answer questions. And, you know, the person who we happened to employ happened to be a health coach, and she was working in my office. And I got to realize what she knew, and another aha moment, realizing that, wow, this is interesting. I don't know exactly where to get all these things or have the time to tell people where to get these things. You know, she was, you know, so much more adept at telling people, well, okay, if you're not going to have gluten, this is what you can have. When you go to a restaurant, this is what you can order. You know, at night, why don't you do these breathing techniques? Or here's an app to help you with meditation. So that to me was, you know, I obviously knew the information, but I didn't really know how to deliver or understand how to deliver it and how it could be delivered. So it sort of happened by chance. And once I saw how fantastic Kerry was, then I started realizing that all my patients, you know, needed a health coach. And, you know, it started that I was training Kerry in functional medicine. She'd sit in with me. And then I sort of realized how important Kerry was to the practice, that I started employing more and more health coaches. And now, you know, health coaching is an essential part of what I do. I couldn't function without my health coaches. And I think the type of medicine and healthcare we deliver now is fantastic because of the health coaches. And, you know, I think they should be part of every doctor's practice.
How do you navigate? So one of the things you were talking about in there is saying, you know, having Kerry sit in on functional medicine and learn about that. And I think that's so critical for, you know, for her or for any health coach to understand the doctor's practice, the dietitian's practice, et cetera. But one of the things that I'm curious in this space, because I think the critique, if you will, of others or where doctors get nervous is they're nervous about things like medications interacting with supplements or, you know, drug nutrient interactions or, you know, recommendations from someone who doesn't have their shared license. And I think your point about people, you know, recognizing where someone is an expert in something is so well taken. And there's going to be someone who's going to know, you know, where, as you said, like what to order on a menu or this sort of a thing. But when it comes to supplements and those recommendations, how do you handle that within the business and in terms of the medication piece of it as well?
Well, yeah, I mean, supplements and medications is always something to think about, but you know, it's rarely a problem, to be quite honest. I mean, we always have to be careful. You know, a lot of my patients come in with many medications, and half the time we're trying to wean them off a lot of them, some of them easier than others. But for the most part, we rarely have a problem with interaction of supplements. We've got to be careful, obviously, and depending on the medication. But a lot of people are coming to me to actually get off their medication. So the process is often weaning people off their medications and getting them onto supplements. So, yeah, it can be tricky. And everyone's different. There's no one way to do it. I mean, we've seen people, you know, have reactions to supplements. We've seen people have reactions to supplements. And so you just, it's something that you monitor. I don't think it's a major issue. I just think it's something you need to be aware of and careful of and play it by ear. And, you know, I don't think there are any rules and regulations for that. I think it's just something you need to be sensitive to and watch what happens. But a lot of the times we're getting people off their medications.
Right. I really appreciate that because I think that, you know, especially this last year at the Integrative Healthcare Symposium, that I was hearing so much fear, I think, in the physician who wants to go down that path. And I think what you're saying is just really helpful. So it's kind of where my head was, but I appreciate hearing it from you because you're practicing that way. And Rob and I talk a lot about this. And I think it's one that, you know, I want to shift a little bit into the patient space of, I mean, we're at this super exciting time and so much of it has to do with the work that you're doing, with the work she's done, with some of my work. We know what better nutrition is and isn't, and that is a super exciting time. I think, you know, decades ago, it was like, okay, we're not sure. And we also know it is what fuels better health. I think the challenge that we have is there's so much information, you know, everywhere somebody turns. And I'm really seeing people, I say, you know, we have infobesity or nutrition whiplash. Like there's just so much information, even the good information is getting stuck in there. So I'm curious within your private practice, but also as you're communicating and you do so much work in the mass on the national and international scale, you know, how can we help people simplify the information, like to figure out what they need and what they can really just put aside?
Yeah, I mean, it's a big problem because there's so much misinformation. And, you know, I was just discussing it with my wife this morning. Now eggs are right. Suddenly, we don't have to worry about cholesterol. And it's because the science is acknowledging it, or whatever they want to call science. I mean, I just find it very interesting that a lot of common sense knowledge is, you know, after 10, 20 years, they say, oh, it's all right to eat eggs as if this is a new thing. You know, so I think my philosophy goes back to eat foods as close to nature as possible. Most of the time, if foods haven't been altered with and damaged and sprayed, and it's, you know, most foods are fine. I mean, I usually tell people, eat as close to nature as possible. Try eat foods that aren't altered. Try get foods from your farmer. I think it's what we're doing to foods. I mean, I know Robin talks a lot about this, which is a bigger problem than the food itself. You know, I don't problem with, you know, low-fat anything, taking parts of a food out. You know, egg white omelets drive me crazy. So I think just eat whole foods as close to nature as possible is a good starting point. And then I think we've developed major issues in our culture. You know, diabetes, pre-diabetes, 1 in 3 American adults are carbohydrate intolerant, probably more. 1 in 3 adults are pre-diabetic or diabetic. So what I see in my practice is, you know, a lot of people are what I call carbohydrate intolerant, and they need to cut back on their carbs. And even often it's on grains that are supposedly healthy for a lot of people. I'm a perfect example. I became pre-diabetic by eating lots of whole grains and lots of fruits, a diet that I thought would be healthy for me and my patients, and I became pre-diabetic. And I know if I eat too many carbs, and I'm not saying all carbs are bad, but for my body, that's a problem. So it's a lot of it's also educating people about, you know, their own metabolism and, you know, how many carbs they can tolerate. So I think, you know, for the most part, eat whole foods. But, you know, a lot of people, more and more people need to watch how they are metabolizing carbs. And, you know, and then you get therapeutic diets for various problems. You know, autoimmune problems need to be stricter with the grains, for instance. So.
I want to jump in here on this, you know, because it really dovetails to what you just said before about you have surrounded yourself with this team of health coaches. And I think, you know, my head goes straight to my kids. You know, they have coaches for all the different sports they play. They have they have literacy coaches if they need it at school. They have somebody to coach them in math if they need it, you know. And I think for some reason we have this mental block on the fact that we could have a support team around our health. And what has happened, and we both speak to this so much, is, you know, suddenly we found ourselves totally illiterate. We're illiterate on health issues. We're illiterate on food issues. You know, the supplement thing is proving an illiteracy. You know, now with everything that's happening around the EpiPen, you know, there's this awakening to what's going on with the drugs. And people are realizing, hey, I really need a team here. And the other piece I think people are realizing, and in a weird way, I think it's harder for people to give themselves permission for this, is diet's no longer one size fits all. And if you think back to 30 years ago, sitting around, say, a Thanksgiving dinner table, we all probably ate a pretty similar meal. And now today, just like you're saying, you know, carbs may be wicked to one person and absolutely essential to another. Meat products may be wicked to one person and essential to another. And people come at you all the time saying, what should I do? And I think to open that conversation to say, you know, hey, in any given family, somebody may be dealing with diabetes, food allergies, a pediatric cancer patient, you know, and then it's no longer one size fits all. And I think, you know, that role that you play as a teacher, you know, I think has been one of your most valuable roles. And I think in your most recent book, you do a really good job of really taking it chapter by chapter and saying, you know what, all this stuff that we have pumped into the food, get it out. Here are ways that you can sleep better. Your sex life is better. You're going to feel better. Your skin is better. And I think about that as an audience, like who doesn't want that, you know? And I wonder what is the biggest hurdle as you've made that transition? What's the biggest hurdle you've seen?
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, I think that's what the importance of the health coaches. People don't realize. I mean, they can have a coach for everything else. I think most people need health coaching. I mean, my wife has been fantastic for me because I don't go into the supermarket all the time and I don't know the specifics. And in the same way, the health coaches are fantastic for me and for my patients because it's so much easier to have someone who can guide you into, you know, for instance, we're telling people, well, you know, those vegetable oils, you shouldn't be, you know, cooking with the vegetables, or, and we're telling them why. And then we tell them, well, we'll try this, you know, try coconut oil, try avocado oil, try, you know, olive oil. You, maybe you shouldn't cook at high heating points. Or let's take almond milk. Okay, don't, you know, you may be sensitive to dairy. You should drink almond milk. But you know what? A lot of those almond milks in the health food store have carrageenan in, which may be a problem. So try this Khalifa brand, because that doesn't have carrageenan. So things like that. I mean, these little nitty-gritty things that are the specifics to help people implement a healthy life. You need a coach. I mean, I've been lucky in many ways because I've had my wife all along. And I, my health coaches are teaching me stuff every day. It's really lovely to have these young, dedicated women who are living this life showing me, well, you know, I just got turned on to this coconut yogurt, or you got to try this Khalifa almond milk. It's got no carrageenan. So it's really exciting to be working in a time like this where there's all this new products coming onto the market, and you have a team of people who's sort of looking for new stuff and looking for healthier stuff. So you need a team. You need coaches. We all do. I do.
I think it's so interesting. I actually, a decade ago, I was giving a talk to a room full of dietitians, and I was saying, you know, we're running into problems because too many people are focused on giving information. And I like to call, whether it's health coaching or dietitians, nutritionists, there's so many, you know, there are different levels or different areas where people are working or training, et cetera. But I think it's that implementation. And I use the term chief implementation officer when someone's like, yeah, what do you do? And I think the point that you're making is so key, because at the end of the day, you have to turn around and you have to say to someone, okay, let me understand your lifestyle. And the only way we as a team are going to be successful is if my recommendations, if I have recommendations and someone, either me or my teammate, helps you implement them. And that, exactly, to me is really powerful. On that note, I was at your, I think it was your most recent book launch. I have to catch up maybe, but we were at ABC and you were talking with, I think, a chef that you've had as a patient.
Oh, Seamus, right, yep.
Yeah, he's incredible. And I found one of the things that you guys talked about so refreshing. You, and I've heard you say this before, but I think in the public setting, you know, to talk about the fact that you as the doctor cannot do all the work. I mean, you talked about how motivated Seamus is and was, and how hard he worked. And I think that's really interesting. I don't know. I mean, it's hard. I get that sometimes we get patients coming in who are so beaten down by their experience, their disease, they're, you know, not feeling like they're anywhere near better health. But there is a bit of tough love in this where we can't create the moment for the patient. So I'm just curious, you know, if there are moments where you actually have to, it's not that you have to break up with a patient, but you have to have those harder conversations about the patient really has to do, there's more work on the patient side that has to be done.
Yeah, there's usually more work on the patient side. I mean, I'm usually very clear. You know, I can inspire them and give them the information. They have to make the changes, which are often not that easy. But, you know, you put a little bit of fear in them. You say, look, and this is true. You know, you don't have a choice. You know, same as I didn't have a choice when I found out I was pre-diabetic. I can't eat the way I wanted to eat. I can't have all the dark chocolate and all the ice cream that I may want to have. As you get older, it becomes more real. You got to explain to patients, you know, if you continue down this path, you know, certain things could be happening. And why do you want that? Don't you want to enjoy your children? Don't you want to enjoy your grandchildren? Don't you want to be vital? So there's part of it is inspiration and there's motivation, and you put a bit of fear in them to make them want to change. And then you change and you help change. You know, you help implement the changes, and you coach them and hold their hands in many ways. So I think there are a couple of factors, but I think always putting a little bit of fear, or not in a bad way, but saying, listen, you don't want to get fat and old. You don't want to get diabetes. You don't want to get heart disease. And you don't need to. These things are changeable. This is reversible. I've done it myself. I don't have a choice. I love, you know, I love to have ice cream. I love to have lots of dark chocolate, but I can't. This is just my reality. Because when I do have it, I suffer the consequences. And it's just a matter of time before that's going to happen to you. You may be 25 or 39. You don't really feel it. But I can guarantee you, I've been, you know, I'm 62. I know what happens to me. I know what happens to older people. It's gonna hit you at some time. You might as well make the changes now, because the earlier you make them, the easier it's going to be for you. And you know, and obviously the talk changes with each particular patient, because different people are in different places. But, you know, tough love is important, and support. You know, the health coaching and supporting people on their journey is the key. That's why I think health coaching is the key to helping people make these changes.
You know, I love it. And listening to you, I think, you know, one of the things that I realized as I came through it personally, and I've heard this from countless people, is I don't think people know what it feels like to feel good. If all you know is popping pills and taking stomach medicine and, you know, taking acne medication, and you don't know that there's any alternative out there, you don't know what it feels like to feel good. And then as you transition and you realize that how you eat can impact your digestion, your skin, how you show up in the world every single day, then it becomes more about what you're able to access through that rather than the deprivation. And I think that lens, that shift, that realization is so important, because you realize that instead of it being a restrictive thing, it actually is opening you up to a much more vibrant way of living and a much more complete way, where you're able to give of yourself in a much more complete way. And I think that, you know, I do think that there is a lot of fear still inside of, like, well, what happens if I let go of the medicine? And what happens if I start to make these dietary changes? And what are people going to say? And I think, again, it gets back to this model that you have of supporting people with the coaches around them. And you've spoken, you know, about having your wife there by your side. I think that role, that supportive role, is so critical.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think you brought up a good point. The subjective experience of vitality and wellness is key. And that's what I've noticed over the years. If you can get someone to feel vital and well or good again quickly, then you've got them hooked. And that's often why I start my patients off on my cleanse, because in 2 weeks, most people feel so much better that they go, wow, I can feel like that. And that's the entry point. When you've got someone to feel much better quickly, then you've got them hooked. They don't even have to listen to you, because they want to keep feeling like that. So that subjective experience of vitality is really important as well, because once people have had that, then they don't want to go back to the way they were feeling, because they didn't even realize how bad they were feeling. So I think that is important, to have that experience for you to sort of continue on the journey.
And, you know, Frank, you've been, which I so appreciate in a practitioner, you've been super honest and clear here about, you know, okay, here I was, this doctor, I was eating what I thought was a really healthy diet, and I became pre-diabetic. And I think when you talk about the subjective, it's also really important. And when we use the term people, what I find is a lot of physicians themselves are in that exact same space, or, you know, nurses or, you know, other practitioners. I know many practitioners who come to see you as patients, and that makes me really happy. But, you know, I think that's part of it too, which is, in this medical system, I think we have to work on, when doctors have the experience of starting to feel better themselves without a dependency on you know, certain band-aids, whether they're medications or certain behaviors, I think that's where we can see real exponential shift. So I'm curious, in that capacity, how you find, like, do you do teaching of other practitioners, or do you find that there's a change with healthcare providers versus sort of when you were up and coming, in terms of their interest in pursuing this path for their own health?
You know, I think there is a change. I'm less interested in training practitioners. I think it's much harder. You know, Western doctors are so brainwashed to think a certain way. I don't have the energy anymore to fight them. I think teaching consumers, you know, I think this is a consumer-driven movement. I'm not as – I mean, I think it's important too, and I respect all my colleagues who continue teaching doctors, but I'm less interested in teaching doctors than in teaching clients, patients, consumers, I think we'll get more bang for our buck. Not that I think people shouldn't, but I think my skill is probably sort of more aligned with the consumer than the doctors. But, you know, that's just my feeling. I've just had experience with doctors that have been, you know, it's more of a fight. There's always like but an argument, and it's just harder. So I don't have the energy for that anymore. Getting old.
No, you know, I've seen so much of that in the food movement, and the energy that is positive energy is so expansive that,
exactly.
You know, all of us, we only have one. I mean, there's only one of each of us. And so you have to figure out how you're going to allocate it. Are you going to allocate it towards the positive or towards the negative? And I think the positive is so expansive and so contagious. And like you said earlier, the subjective experience of vitality, I think, you know, people see that in a friend. If a friend suddenly shows up 2 weeks later and has just got a whole different light to them.
Well, I think I've had, like, you know, going through medical school, going through my residency, emigrating from South Africa. I mean, these are all obstacles. They've never been that great. My father dying when I was young was an obstacle. I think you adapt all obstacles. I think medical school was a big obstacle for me because I didn't really enjoy it at all.
That's a good list. That's a really good list. So we'll pivot to the positive. What's the greatest opportunity that you see in this movement?
Well, I think, you know, people getting healthy. People, you know, it's just fantastic to see people not relying on drugs and eating better, supporting local farmers. Just the opportunity of the life we should be leading, eating real food, supporting people who are providing us with real food, not relying on drugs, not, you know, becoming more self-sufficient. I just think it's fantastic.
I love that answer. And now I have no idea who you're going to say for this next one. Who inspires you and why?
You, Robin, well, you inspire. I love what you do. But if I have to think of one person, it would probably be Deborah Zeke from the woman who started Rancho La Puerta. She's 90. Have you ever had her on your podcast?
No, she's like, sounds wonderful.
She's 92, 93, 94 now, maybe. She's still vital. She was so ahead of the game when they started Rancho La Puerta, what, I think in the early 90s. I don't know when they started it, but 1940, I'm not exactly sure, but they were so ahead of the game, and their philosophy has been so right on. Just, she would be one person, and if I have to think of a group, you know, I have so many patients that inspire me. When, you know, when you see someone who's really sick and makes these changes, someone like Seamus. So that's, you know, I love, you know, stories like that, and I see it so often. So that's inspirational. I love, you know, I love what you guys do. It's all inspirational. I don't know if it's hard to choose one person.
I love you choosing Deborah, though, and especially also with her. She has overcome so much and wanting to enable better health in others on behalf of the people she's lost. I mean, it's just, she's incredible. So that's a gift. Thank you for sharing that one. So, you know, you said something interesting about your early questioning of your government when you were in South Africa. And, you know, I think today we're at an interesting time in the United States. I think we all know that. And specifically when you think about healthcare, the food movement, better health, if you were to send one message directly to Congress, what would that one message be?
Yeah, to not pander to the needs of industry and corporation. You know, think about the health and wellness of the people. So, you know, food decisions, subsidies, et cetera, shouldn't be based on, you know, powerful industries. You know, get real, be honest, don't do things just for the money. I mean, that's maybe unrealistic, but, you know, if we could encourage a food movement where farmers to grow real food, That's what I would probably tell them. Just be honest. Don't fall for the big money. But that's I don't know how realistic that is.
Yeah, no, I absolutely love that. And I think your choice of words with the pandering is really key. So this should be fun. If you were food, what would you be and why?
I'd be a coconut living in a tropical climate. You know, I'd love to live at the beach or whatever in a tropical climate. I love coconuts. Very versatile. I have to choose a coconut.
I love it. Absolutely love it. Okay, so now let's crystal ball it. It's the year 2050, so 2050. How does this story play out?
I think the story is going to play out in a way as we've been wanting it. The changes are happening so quickly. So, you know, hopefully in 2050, we'll be saying, well, I told you so. We should have done this 50 years ago. Taken 50 years, but at least we're there now. So that's what I'm hoping it, you know, plays out in 2050, that all these changes that we're trying to make can push through happen. I see it happening. It seems to be happening every year. So I knew this, you know, the activism that Robin's doing with the whole EpiPen thing, amongst other things, and food allergies, and your education, your nutrition education. I think we're all slowly changing the system. So I'm guessing in 2050, we'll look back and say, well, I told you so. You should have done it 50 years ago.
This is so awesome. Such a pleasure to have. We needed this writing. Robin said that when we were getting on. She's like, I am so happy to have him on.
I think the world of really look forward to the next time.
Sorry for the technical difficulties at the end there. Luckily, we got through the podcast, and what a podcast it was. Thank you, ladies. Thank you, Dr. Lippman. Right, on to next week. We have Marcy Zaroff on the show. She is an eco-fashion pioneer and an internationally recognized eco-lifestyle entrepreneur, educator, innovator, and expert, and is the founder of both Under the Canopy and Metaware. Yes, we all think about what we put into our bodies, but do we think about what we wear, where it comes from, how it can be affecting our health? Well, if you want to learn some more, you better tune in next week. Until then, I'll see you next time.